Welcome to another episode of Pat and the Fat Man Patreon edition. I'm Pat.
Not the Fat Man, otherwise known as Bruce.
We're coming at you with a Patreon request. We're going to talk about Farscape, the Fargate.
Fargate.
Why do you want to get sued? It's a Fargate.
So what show did that?
Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Really?
Yeah. Remember the weird spiky aliens they were using?
I figured they wouldn't mention that at all, though, because that doesn't seem like that would be so far off for those guys. I wouldn't think anybody that made that would watch Farscape.
Well, it was a joke about Stargate.
Oh.
Because then they didn't want to call it Stargate because they would get sued.
Gotcha.
You have to use the Fargate to get there.
Okay, so they were making fun of Stargate. Okay, that makes more sense.
Yes.
I mean, a little more mainstream. Definitely the movie was more mainstream than I would say the show.
Oh, yeah, by far.
The show is what kept sci-fi alive as a channel.
Practically speaking, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it did. Until Battlestar, basically.
Yeah, until Battlestar. And then it hit a peak, and then it went right away. Like, I don't even know what's on.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to exist anymore, as far as I can tell.
It does, but it's got that one show where Alan Tudyk is an alien in disguise.
Oh, yeah. That actually does look pretty good, because Alan Tudyk's good in most things.
Right.
Expensive as heck to get as a guest at a convention.
I'd imagine.
But good in most things. Oh, yeah.
I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know anymore. I know 20 years ago.
You know, I don't want to get too far off on this, but I want to say, because like MegaCon just happened a couple of weekends ago or last weekend. I can't remember. But they had a bunch of people like Hank Azaria was there.
Nice.
And he did on his socials videos from MegaCon.
Yeah.
He did a video with like all the, like he was in the Star Wars section of the Great Hall doing videos with Mandalorians and whatnot.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. So I'm seeing is that more and more mainstream actors and actresses are starting to go to these conventions just cause.
Well.
Because they know they can make some money.
Yeah. Unlike the cheerleader from Heroes.
I never watched Heroes.
First season was really good, but the actress who played the cheerleader really hated conventions and her fans. So yeah,
I wonder if it's because they're nerdy or because like a lot of men in general, a lot of them were very inappropriate.
I don't know. It was 20 years ago, so it's
right
a very different landscape than it is today. Either way, we're talking about Farscape.
Sorry, guys. Went on a little tangent there. Yes, we're talking about Farscape. Or as I like to call it, Jim Henson After Dark.
Yeah.
Because I started watching this, and really this first episode is like a tale of two episodes. Like there's the beginning part, and not even halfway through, like maybe the first 10, 15 minutes where the starting part of the plot is just like, what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else, once you get into the sci-fi stuff, you're like, okay. All right, this is cool. But then you're also tilting your head going, there's a lot of strong sexual innuendo here.
It's not even innuendo in certain parts of it.
Right.
The conversation between Drogo and what's her name? Zahn.
Oh, yeah.
Is literally just about sex. Sex,
right. And then there's when Crichton catches her meditating later, you know,
mm-hmm.
And she's naked. Oh,
yeah, she's naked. And she's a plant.
And I'm like, you know, I guarantee you in a modern day, this would be put on HBO and then we would get the stuff that we really wanted to see out of all of this. But it was like probably put on, you know, USA Network or something and nothing good came out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I say that now, but it's funny that I never noticed it back when it came out because apparently I was too young and I was thinking about that going, I don't know what age group this was targeted for because it's a little too sci-fi for adults. But it's definitely not kid friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was aimed at college nerds. Maybe
that would kind of be my guess because it was about the time we were college age.
Was it? I thought it was before that.
I think it ended in 2020 or not 2020. It ended in like 2003 or four.
Yeah.
Because I think I watched the first episode at home in high school or not first season. Possibly the second season, and then the rest of it finished in college. And I didn't see it for years because I didn't watch TV for like the first 3 years of college.
Well, yeah, it says 1999. It ran for four seasons, so 99, 2001, 2002.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 2002, 2003, we would have just barely been in college. Well, I would have just barely been in college.
Yeah, I graduated in 2001, so for half of the third season and all of the fourth season, I was in college.
Right.
I think it was aimed at the same people who watched Babylon 5 or Star Trek Babylon 5.
Oh, DS9?
DS9, yes. Yes, DS9. Star Trek Babylon 5. DS9.
Look, I may have been aware of Babylon 5. I may have had it on in the background when it was on. I got to tell you, DS9 was probably way more entertaining than Babylon 5.
No. Anyways, I'm just going to move on from that, because otherwise this is just going to be a Bat 5 versus DS9 conversation. Because we're not going to cover Farscape at all.
Come at me, bro.
I'll throw down on this. I'm coming Don't to Columbus pay me, in bro. June. We will have a throwdown fight on this one. Well, Stilinski pitched Babylon 5 as a Star Trek show. And the Star Trek people were like, nah. And then Bat 5 was so successful, they're like, oh, we got to do a space station show. And he's like, you sons of...
Yeah, but you know what people talk more about these days? DS9. No, DS9 way more.
Yeah, they talk about Bat 5 way more.
No, there's no. Mm-mm.
No, mm-mm. Yeah. The only reason they know about DS9 is because of all of the other Star Trek trash out there. The occasional gem.
You're going to get so many messages from Refill.
Look, everybody knows everything but Lower Decks has been trash over the last like five to eight years. Everybody's aware of that. The Lower Decks has been the one shining gem.
Now I'm going to have to save this and replay it so I can keep this energy going, because this is going to be a podcast and this is going to be an episode.
Oh man. See, the problem is you haven't watched Bat 5 and I haven't watched DS9, so we're both just talking in ignorance.
But isn't that the essence of every great nerd fight?
Yes, it really is. It really is. The best of all nerd fights. Complete ignorance of the other nerddom.
But we're not ignorant about this. We've watched this recently. So I kind of just skipped ahead. You asking me went ahead with my first impressions.
First impressions of the Batman. Yeah, sorry. Right. I'm going to say it. But I'm going
to say it. Got one job to do on this ship.
And I'm going to do it. I love the fact that the ship will not respond to anybody but her. She has to ask the question.
Who programmed this thing to listen to a parrot? But yeah, the first part of it is just so ridiculous. It was just like, yeah, we really don't know how to write this part, so we're just going to go ahead and see what sticks, and hopefully they just forget about it by the time we get into space.
And you really do. Like, I literally forgot about that first part until I watched it again. I'm like, oh, yeah, this happened.
And then once we're on Moira, I'm like, okay, this is the fun part of the ride. And I watched, the next two episodes after that going, okay, yeah, this is fun. Mm-hmm. You just got to get really past the first, couldn't have been 15 minutes, like 10 minutes.
It feels very much for the first 15 minutes like any given sci-fi show from that time frame. X-Files on Fox, like it has that same sort of graininess to it.
There was this horrible sci-fi TV show that was on roughly around the same time called 7 Days. Do you remember that show at all?
No.
It's this ridiculous premise that the American government came up with this time machine. Catch is, the time machine can only go back 7 days. Mm. And you have to have this one crackshot pilot to do it, because to navigate through the space-time continuum, you have to dodge these, this, that, and the other thing. And you always end up crashing, but it's like really difficult to do. Anyways.
Space demons, time demons.
Well, it gets even better, because like they do the mission briefing, right? And like the pilot be like, okay, I need your help with this, talking to one of like the main head guy, and he goes, okay, I'll make a mental note, about that to remind myself from before. It's like, you're trying to say you're gonna go back in time in your own brain to remind yourself of something? What the what kind of crack are you people on? Anyways,
a first note from our patrons is going to be like, you guys sure did not talk a lot about Farscape.
Which is funny, because like I said, I liked it. I digged it. Once we got past, the first 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's odd watching it now because of how good graphics stuff has gotten, and how seamless all of the 3D animation has become these days. And if this had been made now, most of, you know, Rigel would probably be a 3D animated character. Mm. You have some other folks who would probably be motion capture. But it's funny, once you get past the first 15 minutes and you have all of that kind of, you know, what we would call bad 3D animation, a space flight stuff that happens to Crichton, and you get on the ship, everything is practical effects. And so it all looks real.
Right.
I think the, I don't know, magic ability of Jim Henson's group is their ability to make you feel like the world is real. You go back to any of their stuff, Muppets, right, obviously, is the big one. But you look at stuff like The Dark Crystal and the show they did, The Dark Crystal show for Netflix.
Labyrinth.
It all felt very real. Even though you knew they were puppets and they had puppet limitations, like you also just bought it. Mm-hmm. You're like, yeah, fine. But it's real. Mm-hmm. It's really happening. We're really there. There's really a, you know, a five-way love triangle by the end of the Dark Crystal TV show on Netflix.
Well, that's why, like, I called it, like, you know, Jim Henson After Dark, because it was just very much like the kind of thing that you would see on USA Network, you know, past 9 o'clock on a Friday night, you know, back in late 90s.
90210-ish.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. What do they call that? Anime fan service, basically. Mm-hmm. Fanboy service. So what I really like about it is it's both real in its feel, you know, because of the practical effects and the non-leaning on animation, and real in its scope. This isn't like the Federation or any of the sci-fi shows, the same kind of time frame where you typically have a large human organization of some kind and it's grandiose in scale and whatnot. And in this, it's just, it's John, it's one dude flung to the far reaches of the universe, and it turns out there's stuff going on there, mm-hmm. and that he just gets thrown in the middle of, and from a space perspective is super lucky from that, because of how big space is. He just happens to pop out a wormhole near a ship that can dock with him.
Never mind the fact that he was out there to prove the theory that you can use atmosphere and gravity to slingshot you to a faster speed. I think we knew that back in the 60s, guys.
Yeah, we've known that for a long time. A long time.
I want to know what his return plan was, because he was using the chemical-based engine.
Yeah.
And he was burning it the whole time he was trying to slingshot around Earth. So I want to know what his return plan was.
Yeah. But yeah, he gets thrown kind of in the middle of all of this, and none of it makes sense. And it's very, from that perspective, it's very real. Like, you have this stuff going on, these crazy alien creatures, all of them have their own sort of things going on, but they're all very real characters. That, I think, is why the show makes it past the pilot, is because of the ease in which anybody could put themselves in Crichton's shoes, except for the math part. There at the end, the physics and math.
That's one reason. The other reason is you wanted to find out if you're going to see blue boobs.
I don't think I was watching for that reason. Maybe I was. I don't know. I can't confirm or deny.
Oh, it's the internet. Have
17-year-old, 18-year-old Pat Mason's.
Well, now you're just telling people without telling people, because, you know, if you're 17 and 18 and you don't think you want to see blue boobs, I don't even know if I can be on this podcast.
You can't admit that the 18-year-old version of yourself didn't want to see this, but you're just not being honest to yourself. Just admit it. Admit it to yourself. Do it right now.
This is the hill our friendship's going to die on.
I very explicitly didn't think that was going to happen, because it's on cable network television. And we lived in America.
Americans live on hope, Pat.
Rebellions are built on hope.
Oh, man.
Oh, if it didn't happen for Battlestar, it was definitely not going to happen for this show. Okay. Yep. We have derailed.
Oh, man. I love it when we do these things tired.
No joke.
So, yeah, it kind of covered part of. And here's the funny part, watching this, and I actually was that person that went up and looked at this, because part of how he got into the situation he was a freak magnetic storm from the sun, you know, showed up. And I'm like, I did the research. It takes 8 minutes and 20 seconds at the speed of light to reach from the sun to the earth. You're telling me that nobody saw that thing coming?
All right. So no. And because it's going at the fastest we can tell something's coming at us is the speed of light. So if the thing is moving at the speed of light, you get blindsided because you literally can't tell until it's right there on you. But then
how did they see it at all?
Well, I don't know. Come on, man. It's a sci-fi show.
See,
I'm just telling you what the actual science is. I'm not telling you how well the show portrayed it.
You know, seeing as how his dad walked on the moon and wasn't one of the 12 people listed in the history books as one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
I looked that up too, ladies and gentlemen. Why? Because I'm bored.
Well, I guess in this version of Earth, we didn't abandon the whole moon thing until, you know, 2020. However, what are we going to be there next year?
Well, that depends on Boeing. I wouldn't put a whole lot of hope there.
Yeah.
But if that were the case, I would think that we would have gotten past the space shuttle to do these things.
Right. That's the other thing. You're still using the old space shuttle workhorse.
His best friend walks into the cleaning room, you know, where you're supposed to be getting suited up. Because they let you do that.
Yeah.
Especially when your best friend is not in clean clothes.
Right. He's not in the clean suit clothes.
Yeah.
And just after your guy escaped from quarantine for the last 4 hours.
And then his dad walks in. So apparently NASA just don't give a damn about germs in space anymore.
Nah, just bleep it.
Just bleep it. It's science. We don't believe in science here. That's why we're doing the theories that we proved back in the 60s.
Yeah. NASA. We don't believe in science anymore. Wait, what? Flat Earth all the way.
Then what are we slingshotting around? A dinner plate?
Yes. It's flat space.
So, yes. Barring all that, we make it in. John Crichton makes it into space.
Spicacia.
And using a spaceship that's inside of a spaceship, he decides he's going to slingshot himself around the Earth. When all of a sudden, a mystical magnetic storm appears from the sun and throws him across space.
Yep. I like how he has to fly through this thing like it's some sort of tunnel. Right. And you hear the word wormhole and you think, oh, it's a tunnel. I'm like, no, that's not how it works. Theoretically, if these things exist, which I'm pretty iffy on at this point from the science perspective, it's going to be like a in out sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. You go through it and you're immediately on the other side. It's almost instantaneous.
Right, like a hole in a piece of paper.
Exactly. The whole him traversing through the wormhole thing. Fun from a visual 3D, making the Aladdin on the carpet ride out of the Cave of Wonders thing look better. Because it looked pretty bad. That was real early 3D graphics animation. It was fun to look at, but it's, you know, scientifically, meh. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
Because they even made that kind of thing in Interstellar, was how they did that.
Oh, yeah. And they're in that wormhole for like forever. And I'm like, that's not how if you were to fold space that it would work.
Of course, it was constructed by us, however, in another dimension, however much in the future kind of thing. So who knows?
Yeah.
But back to this unrealistic sci-fi. And then he comes out to the other side, of course, in the middle of the battle. He gets hit. He gets run over by a spaceship and then gets tractor beamed into a bigger ship. The first thing I mentioned becomes important because it's mentioned later in the episode. So I don't know what happens to his ship. He lands safely in the docking bay.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden his electrics go haywire.
I think it's because the Roomba droids start messing with his ship. I think that's what happens.
All right, I can go with that.
At least that's how I took it. Because that's kind of the first creature he really interacts with is the Roomba droid.
Right.
Which he then shoots off of the top of his thing. And then when he lets it up, it shoots him in the face.
It shoots him in the face. And then the next thing you see is him standing.
Yeah, and walking down a corridor. And you're like, how did we get here? Right? What were the sequence of events that went from shot in the face with the green thing to walking into the
bridge?
The bridge, yeah. Walking into the bridge, hearing all of a, you know, it's interesting. You only really hear the alien speech in this first episode. There's right. a couple of the times in the show that it happens, but for the most part, because of the translating microbes that colonize at the base of your brainstem, let that sink in. Just like John does, he gets told that, and he's like, colonize on my brainstem.
Okay. I mean, back in my planet, that's a cause for alarm.
Yeah. This is really the only time you get to hear the different languages that Drogo and Zahn speak. And maybe Pilot, too. But I don't think you hear Rigel at all. Mm-mm. Or Aaron.
No, because he doesn't show up until after he gets hit with the microbe.
Yeah. You don't hear Peacekeeper speech until the episodes at the very end of the show, when they're back on Earth and she's trying to talk to some of the other people there, like Crichton's dad. Oh. It's almost like this backwards English kind of talk. So, but I always thought that was a really cool scene. And then the Roomba droid punches a hole in his boot and gives him the shot.
Bam, right in the feet. Take that, Whitey.
Mm-hmm. And then they're interrogating him about his ship and its technology, and he's just like, I don't know what here I am or what I'm doing.
Well, it's about the reaction we all would have and what happens in most sci-fi. So that sequence is pretty par for the course for sci-fi. I mean, to his credit, you know, he didn't get violent.
Yeah.
He's very passive. That's the other thing. Later on, he's asked what his rank is. He doesn't mention that, does he?
No, he says his rank is commander.
Oh, okay.
My rank's a commander, but not in any military you know of.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, because it really does not come through as him as a astronaut.
Yeah. Well, he strikes me much more as sort of the wait and see kind of a scientist.
Uh-huh.
The I'm going to let things play out to the point where I have to act in order to make sure I survive. But otherwise, I'm just going to let things play out like they're going to. And the reality of it is, like, that's where he's at. Like, he doesn't know why he's here, how he got here, who these people are, why they're being shot at, or what the large guy who just ripped the command console apart to get to the wires to get the shock collar off of Moira is doing. Let alone the guy that keeps screaming at his pilot, who's a hologram in the wall. I love how he's like, yeah, that other guy, that hologram guy. And then Rigel's introduction, I'll take care of you now, you take care of me later.
Well, I like that part, because then later on when you find out that it was a prison ship, you're like, yes, that's exactly like what a Weasley prisoner would do.
Yeah.
It's like try to get, you know, the big guy to be on his side while he pretends that he's protecting him, you know, in the first place. And therefore, the big guy owes him.
Yep.
I did like that. When you watch the later episodes following this, you could definitely see like a Yoda influence on it. Not like in a story kind of way, but more like in how he was made.
Oh, yeah.
And how he moves around. Like, he was definitely like, this is like the opposite of Yoda kind of thing, you know, same size and things like that. But he's going to be the materialistic weasel kind of Yoda.
Yeah. We're going to make the anti-Yoda. And that's Rigel.
Yes, the anti-Yoda.
The anti-Yoda. Yeah. And I'm trying to remember, because eventually Crichton freaks out, and I just forgot his name. Dargo. I wonder if this is yet another thing that J.R.R. Martin ripped off. Dargo. All you gotta do is read and watch enough science fiction and fantasy, and you'll find all the things J.R.R. Martin ripped off to make to make the Game of Thrones series.
Well, to be fair, Game of Thrones came out. Didn't Game of Thrones come out way before this? I thought like Game of Thrones came out in like the 80s.
Maybe. So maybe it's the other way.
That's why he didn't write all these others. It's because he wrote these first books and no one was paying attention. So he's like, oh, I guess I got time, you know.
I'm going to find out. Yeah, 96. I mean, 3 years. So they're probably in production around the same time, to be honest.
Well, the first two books came out before. Game of Thrones in 96, Clash of Kings in 98.
Yeah.
And then Storm of Swords in 2000.
So Khal Drogo versus Game of Thrones,
which would make you think that it was the other way around, that, you know, whoever wrote Farscape ripped it off from Game of Thrones, which, to be fair, that was definitely a time where science fiction fantasy books weren't being made into TV or movies. So
yeah, this wasn't the heyday of sci-fi fantasy that really kicked off with Iron Man. You can thank Marvel forming their own movie studio and then eventually getting bought out by Disney for the kind of crazy sci-fi fantasy rich fandom we live in today.
And I promise we'll get back to Farscape. I will say this about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, was that was a more solidly rooted point in that kind of movies, because you had the X-Men and Spider-Man movies that came before those. Granted, people had very mixed feelings about them, so those roots didn't get to set like Iron Man did.
Yeah. The thing Marvel's always had on its side with its stories is that it doesn't have to match, quote unquote, the canon, because there is no the canon.
That's just because Marvel did the thing where, like, guess what? Everything happens. We just haven't drawn it yet.
Right. I mean, once the comic books hit like the 80s, that's where they were at. They were like, well, we've drawn our stories out, you know, some of these characters are 30, 40 years old now. We've done dang near every storyline. I'm going to start rebooting them and we'll do different storylines. And so we've seen, like, so you can do just Spider-Man. We have, I want to say we've got four distinct storyline movie adaptations.
Is that including the cartoon one?
Yeah, that includes Across the Spider-Verse. Yeah.
So Maguire.
Yeah, Tobey Maguire.
Garfield, right?
I don't remember his name.
Okay. Holland,
which is the MCU one,
right?
And then Miles Morales,
that's the cartoons.
Yeah And that's within the last 20 years, right?
Oh yeah,
literally two of those are happening concurrently. Like, you know, Tom Holland MCU Spider-Man and Miles Morales, and both of those have been amazing. I will say, from Marvel perspective, Spider-Man has been by far the most successful franchise, even outside of the MCU.
Oh, outside the MCU. Yeah, absolutely.
Outside the MCU. Inside, you're probably talking the Avengers, but outside the MCU.
Yeah.
You know, the Fantastic Four didn't do well.
Oh my God. And they're trying again, aren't they?
But that's going to be MCU Fantastic Four.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. X-Men did okay. Didn't do okay. Like, it went up and down.
Down.
Trying to think of what the other ones. They did Ghost Rider. They did, I mean, Blade was really good, but it was a single one.
And I don't really think a whole lot of people knew Blade. Like, when Blade came out, I didn't know it was based off a comic book.
Right. I very few people did, unless you were a comic aficionado.
Right.
Most people, even today, I think it's just a vampire movie.
Right.
Probably one of the better ones. No, not probably. Definitely one of the better ones.
So if you're wondering how we came down this rabbit hole, is because we were thinking that somehow J.R.R. Martin ripped off Farscape for his first books, but
yeah.
So no, Dargo is the name of our fighter. When I started watching this for the second time in the last, you know, week, I started pinpointing, like, in how they were as D&D characters in a party.
Oh, yeah, this is definitely a D&D party. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Dargo being the fighter. Zahn is the paladin.
Cleric.
Cleric? Okay, yeah, cleric. Yeah. Cleric. John, not quite a rogue, though.
John probably fits rogue, and Rigel would be your bard.
Yeah.
But they both sort of play those roles interchangeably.
Right.
And John could also substitute as your sorcerer and or wizard, since he's the technology kind of guy. when you're in sci-fi verse, that's what your technologist is, your wizard.
From what I can remember of Farscape, there really isn't any sort of magic in this series.
No. It's all science. It's just advanced enough that it seems like magic.
It's definitely science fiction.
Yes.
It's not like Star Trek, where Star Trek actually tries to explain what it does. This doesn't do that. This just, you know, says this is our technology and deal with it.
Yeah, it's much more like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where it just says this thing does this. Congratulations.
Right. Like,
everybody has a babblefish, it translates for you. Good job. Where'd it come from? Nobody really knows. Some people use it as a fundamental reason for their belief in there being a god. because it exists.
But once you get the immediate introductions, and then you get into the, I guess, the sort of plot, which is, I guess, the main plot being, or not the secondary plot. This is a secondary plot where the villain feels like he's been slighted because, you know, he felt that the technologically inferior human intentionally put himself in the path of his brother that killed him.
Right.
You know.
Well, and you see kind of your introduction to the Peacekeepers as this sort of
empire,
regimented, but also dumb.
Yes.
And petty group. Right. And we see this kind of play out the further we get into the storyline, and the bigger the Peacekeepers become, and the bigger the bigger bad becomes. Right. Because we start out with Kreese.
And then we get in the later seasons, find out they're really into BDSM because of the way they dress.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's obvious. They're Nazis. Anyways. So we have Kreese, and he's sort of the petty lower level officer who's going to use his power to take vengeance upon his accidental killing of his brother. Eventually, we get to the bigger bads. You get Scorpio, and then the biggest bads, who are basically the king and queen, effectively, in the movie. But you see, the incompetence kind of goes up the chain. Scorpio is this sort of semi-mastermind who's trying to play within the Peacekeeper game because he's Scaren? I'm trying to remember the other race, but if we do more of the show, we'll get there. But he doesn't seem to have the same both dedication to the regimented system of the Peacekeepers and the petty dumbness that the Peacekeepers seem to embody as a group. And we kind of find out like why that happened in the Peacekeeper Wars at the very end of the show. So at least we get an answer there. But yeah, Kreese is sort of the introduction to there's an evil empire and it's dumb and it's petty. And that's like the one reason Aaron leaves, because they're dumb and petty, because they're going to kill her because she's had too much exposure.
Yep.
It's interesting because it's a bunch of scenes where he shows that he doesn't have any loyalty, obviously, because he doesn't have any loyalty. He doesn't know anything about this world. And so he keeps switching allegiances and finally ends up more or less aligning himself to the ship.
Right.
And we see that kind of at the end where he repairs the Roomba, the Roomba droid. At this point, we don't know that they're like intimately tied in with the ship. We just know it's this little creature that lives on the ship. It's the first thing you saw that he accidentally hurt when he hit the ejection button, that he helps to tie up with some, you know, electric tape. I don't know where he got that from, but, and I also don't know why that works to turn the light back on, but
there's that, right? And two, why wasn't it duct tape? Isn't duct tape NASA's thing? You know, like, this is the magic that we've brought into the world is duct tape.
Oh yeah. I mean, electrical tapes, it's good for very specific electrical uses, but not that. That would have been perfect for duct tape.
You want to talk about magic?
Yeah, science is sufficiently advanced to be indistinguishable from magic. Duct tape. I can stick almost any substance to almost any other substance. Booyah. It's like that scene with Dr. Morpheus. It's like, I can create fire. And then Rusty Venture like takes out the box of matches and strikes one and says, woo.
yeah, we kind of went off the rails here. We were going to do this scene by scene, but no,
that's just not happening. This is not happening. This is not what you paid for. You paid for this. I really do hope you're happy, and if you're not, please let us know, and we'll go back to something else. But yeah. On a serious note, though, if you subscribe to our show via Patreon through Apple, they are now charging you 30% more, and or 30% of that is going to Apple. So if you could go directly through Patreon, that would be better for everybody involved. I don't think many of you are subscribed through Apple, but I think it's directly through Patreon.
Well, it's mainly for you guys, you listeners, because like we don't pay that much attention to what's coming in. We're just looking for the help to make this podcast. But it's just you're actually knowing that 100% of what you're putting in is going to us for whatever purposes you want us to make it for. And none of it's going to Apple.
Yeah.
So it's all going to the podcast.
And even then, that's not entirely true because Patreon does take its cut.
Oh,
they do take a cut for basically credit card services. But it's an even bigger slice, right? If you add on their cut and Apple's cut, it's almost 40%. Mm-hmm. So don't subscribe to us through Apple. Go through Patreon directly. And if we find out the Patreon fees are too much, we'll
figure something out.
Switch to something better. Yeah. Right. Back to the show.
Back to the Let's show.
Talk about, so we have our fighter. We have our cleric. She's interesting. You know, there's this introductory scene we have. It is in a way where her and
Dargo.
I'm going to call him Drogo the whole dang time, aren't I? Drogo. Her and Drogo had this kind of sit down conversation where she just tells him, hey, I don't remember her whole name. Zahn is the end of it. But I think it's partly her title. And he says who he is. And we learn that he's, you know, about 30 years old. They use cycles instead of years, you know, whatever that means. Cycles around the sun, I guess, for their planet. Well, that is super variable. And she calls him a young, you know, a young pup or something like that.
She said, you're but a boy.
You're but a boy. Yeah. And he says, no, I'm a full, you know, full grown warrior, blah, blah, blah. But more or less what's portrayed in that scene is that Zahn is very old. Mm-hmm. And she is a priestess and knows the fourth type of pleasure. I don't remember how they put it, but it definitely had a lot of sense. Yeah.
Because Dargo mentions it, and it's told that you all know of the, I've heard of the fourth sense, you know.
Yeah. It all had very
sexual connotations. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Now we're getting back into my wheelhouse here.
Yeah. The other thing you learn about her is that she was an anarchist, and not just anarchist, but the chief anarchist. And this kind of plays in later to her philosophy about how the ship should run, as well as Dargo's warrior philosophy, you know, the strongest should lead kind of a thing.
Well, it's the yin and yang, and you can even like visually speaking, it's very yin and yang. She's blue. He's got very red undertones, you know, hot and cold.
Yeah. She's slighter. He's a lot bigger and buffer.
Is he bigger? Because she's pretty tall.
She's tall, but he's like what I mean by bigger is like,
you mean,
you know, built, he's basically bust, built like muscular. A tight end.
Right.
And she's like a volleyball player. Like their physiques are not the same. And then we have Rigel, who we basically learn through over the course of the first episode, he's a merchant, he can do trading, and he's also kind of a skis bag. we learn that he was deposed because he's how John finds out that they're on a prison vessel in the first place. And, you know, he was deposed by his half brother, and he's supposed to rule over like 8 or 9 billion Hynerians, and he's out to reclaim his throne. So we learn his motivation. We learn Dargo's motivation when he tells John that he was a prisoner aboard the ship for like 7 years or 7 cycles, and he will stop anybody with any means necessary to put him back in prison. So basically, that's Dargo's motivation. You don't know what Zahn's is besides
not freedom. Being in prison. Right.
Right. And you also Crichton and Aaron are in a very similar situation, with Aaron knowing a lot more about the universe she's in, but being adrift in it because now she's cut off from the one thing she's known her entire life, which is the regimented discipline of the Peacekeeper Society, which she is now, you know, considered to be tainted goods.
Right, but the difference there is that Crichton is there through no intentional action of his own.
Right.
Aaron is there because she tried to press the attack and then ended up, her ship ended up disabled and they ended up pulling her in.
Well, but I'm saying, like, by the end of the episode, she's on board because if she wasn't, she'd be dead.
Right.
And so for both of them, they're in the situation, but for very different reasons, but they're still sort of adrift. Like, there's no, Crichton is like, I got to get home. And Aaron is like, I don't even know what.
Right. I don't have a home.
Yeah.
My home was just taken away from me because of stupidity.
Yeah. And we don't learn really Pilot's motivation until almost season two.
Right. At this point, Pilot is nothing more than a droid, basically, from Star Wars. It's nothing more than R2-D2 or C-3PO.
Yeah.
It's part of the ship. It's just there. So we don't know anything about Pilot at this point that would make us think of it as a character.
Other than it has an organic face to it.
Right.
But then you learn the ship is bio-organic. It's like organic metal stuff. The ship's a living being that they call Moira. So I find it interesting we get some of the motivations, but not all of the motivations. And that speaks, honestly, pretty highly of the writers of the show.
Oh, sure.
Because they do a good job of giving you enough people's motivations right off the bat that it would make sense to have. And then being able to use those to sort of track forward through shows, but also bearing the lead for later on. Like, well, we have these other characters who, you know, we don't know what their end game is. We don't even know if they have an end game. We don't know what that looks like. I think it's a very well done show, kind of overall from a writing perspective.
I'll say this because I watched the second and the third episode. It's funny how it jumps right in to the episodical aspect of it. Today's adventure kind of thing. Mm. It does use the main storyline, but it keeps it just below the surface enough that you can see it, but it's not overriding the attention. It's not a problem. It just, I thought it was a little fast the way how they kind of just go, okay, today's adventure is, you know.
And I think that speaks a lot to the format of television at that time.
Uh-huh. We're so accustomed to the incorporating into the universe, buying into the story thing.
Right. Where we get 8-episode or 12-episode shows that don't have time to screw around with episodicness.
Well, now on Disney Plus, we definitely, yeah.
Even on Netflix and Amazon, you know, in the early days of those, you still had like 24-episode shows.
Yeah.
These days, it is all about that core storyline and there is no fluff built in. Back in the day when you had 23 to 26 episode seasons, there was time to do this kind of stuff.
Because the goal was to make a full season, which was 22 episodes, which is so funny because like in nowadays with streaming, you would wonder why wouldn't you have all that time? Because it's, you don't have to work yourself into a block on TV. You could make those 24 episodes and they're watched whenever, and it doesn't matter the streaming service as long as you're watching. So why couldn't you continue a series on for forever?
Yeah.
And I guess it's because of money, but I mean,
it's money.
But streaming services have to be making as much money as cable by now.
I don't think that's necessarily true yet. It will be soon because all the streaming services have instituted commercial-based streaming.
Oh, yeah.
So just like cable, one of the original promises of cable was less commercials, and eventually that promise just sort of went away. It'll do that with streaming as well, because the ultimate truth is that's what brings the money in. It's not the subscribers, but the advertisements. And so as long as that is the primary means of making money for the studios, that's what we're going to get. There's a lot of very big budget TV being made. I mean, you look at the numbers that went into Ahsoka, that went into The Acolyte, that went into The Rings of Power, the Boys. Those aren't cheap shows. Game of Thrones, even the Game of Thrones series they're doing now. There's a lot of money that goes into those shows, into those episodes. And so the question is, if they did more, could they get away with like cheaper and give us more and still pay the same price, or would it just, would the dollar figure just keep going up, you know, linearly? I think 2024 was a pretty rough year for a lot of TV shows. There was a pretty significant non-watch rate for a lot of the very big budget stuff.
When you had gems like The Acolyte, I mean, who can...
Yeah, I think The Acolyte was one of the most expensive Star Wars shows, if not the most expensive Star Wars show made. And viewership was a 60% drop from the first episode to the last episode, which is pretty terrible.
Here's the funny part. Instead of trying to push through that and make season two better and try to correct the problem, they just said, nope, we're just going to cut our losses. And I'm like, you're freaking Disney. Come on.
Yeah.
Because I think just cutting bait and not trying to fix the problem actually compounds the problem.
So for Rings of Power, for Amazon's Rings of Power series, there was about, say, there was a 60% drop between season one and season two. But season three has been renewed and they're going forward with it, even though it's one of the most expensive shows, not just that they've made, but that has been made. But they are moving forward with it.
Jeff Bezos can afford it.
Right. That's part of it. Season two was significantly better than season one. And I think season three will likely get better as the showrunners get better. But that's a guess. But yeah, Farscape.
And I think the reason why, like, you and I genuinely enjoy it, so we're not going to pick at it too much. I think it's hard to talk about things that you really like because it's, what else is to say other than that you like it?
Yeah. I mean, really, the nitpicky stuff all comes in that first 15 to 20 minutes when he's on Earth. But once he's on the spaceship, you're just like, all right, I'm in for the ride. It's just fun at that point. It is definitely adult in its essence.
But when he comes out of the wormhole or whatever, and he's trying to contact Houston... Well, one, he's calling out his friend's name and his dad's name. Come on.
Yeah.
Professionalism here, buddy. And two is that he doesn't wait long enough for a response. It was like, again, how far did you think you were going to go? Because transmission time, I mean, would be an issue.
Right.
And you're not giving him any time to respond.
It gets longer as you're out there.
Like, where's Earth? Like, well, did you have a plan on how you were going to find Earth? And again, how far did you think you were going to go? Plus, you couldn't stop, so you had to, if your plan was to go and slingshot around, you certainly weren't going to stop dead in space because that was going to be problematic.
Right. That's not how inertia works.
Or how, you know, your return plan would work.
Right. That's exactly what you end up doing with your multi-ton biomechanical ship at the end of this episode, is slingshotting it so to give you a bunch of thrust to get away from the Peacekeeper carrier. Like, that's the whole point. So what were you planning on doing back in Earth? It's gonna be dead in space later somewhere, space ghost, coast to coast.
And it's, you know, moonwalking dad that no one's heard of.
Yep. With the rattlers in the stomach. Don't know if you'll hear me, Dad, but I definitely got rattlers now.
There's a snake in my boot.
Someone's poisoned the well.
Oh, the water, yeah. Oh, well, that's how we're going to end this. We talk about a snake in a boot.
All right. Parting thoughts about episode one of Farscape, the pilot episode.
It's a good start. I wouldn't say it's the greatest start to any sci-fi show, but I mean, it was a very good start. And once you get past the opening and through this episode, and then you get enough to watch the second episode, it really starts to grow legs and really starts to run on its own. We'll see if I have the attention span to keep watching the rest of the show. I got to tell you, nowadays, man, it's hard to focus, but I would say it's very good. I loved, like you said, the Jim Henson work, the work that the Jim Henson Company did. It was all very well aesthetically pleasing, and the characters seemed very good.
You know, in my mind, this bridged the gap for me from Babylon 5, which I watched in like middle school through high school, and then Battlestar Galactica, which was later on at college. This was sort of that middle piece. From a traveling the galaxy, encountering random races, you know, I watched TNG. So TNG was probably like before Bat 5, you know, that's the next generation.
Yeah, that was early 90s.
This struck me as a really interesting combination of TNG and Babylon 5. And I think the pilot does a really good job of kicking you off into this world where, you know, it could be a lot of fun. That's just what you get from the first thing. It's like, this is really cool stuff. It's done really well. Granted, it's all puppets, but it all looks really good. Mm-hmm. It's all more believable than the 3D graphics. And it looks like it could be a very interesting story that I want to watch. And so I think the pilot does its primary thing. You know, the primary goal of a pilot is to get the viewer to want to watch the next one.
Right.
Or to commit to the whole series. And I really do think the show does that. I think the pilot pulls that off pretty expertly. And I think that's a lot of, you know, that's a lot of credit to the writers and the creator of the show. Mm-hmm. If you are beloved Patreons like this episode, let us know. We can continue Farscape or we can start working on something else for y'all. It's up to you. We could, you know, review something more recent like Skeleton Crew or Andor season 2 coming up, or maybe Marvel show. I'd honestly love to do Loki both season 1 and 2 episode by episode. Because it was such a good show. WandaVision 2.
Yes.
Honestly, even Agatha All Along. There are some parts of that show that are eye-rollingly bad. Like, oh my gosh, why? But for the most part, it's actually a very well-done show and a very well-done story. So I'd even be willing to do that. I just want to say thank you to everyone out there who supports us. Remember, tell your family and friends and everyone you meet on the street. That's the way we get more support. The more support we get, the more we can pay our editor. And we appreciate you all and love you all. And tell us what you want to hear our lovely, sultry voices talking about.
Yes, and I'm not, you know, saying this for me, but it could be about anything. It could be about blue space boobs. I mean, I don't know. It's up to you guys, you know? Just throwing it out there.
I don't know how to fill a whole episode with that, Bruce. It's a good 5-minute bit,
but you don't know how to fill an entire hour talking about blue space boobs. I mean, how did we get here, Pat? I mean, how did we make it this
we're
far?
We're 40
I mean,
years old, Bruce. Just, that's like how I don't we got even here. Know you. We're 40 it's years just, old. I've got a mortgage.
You've been like this always. I mean, it's like I don't even know you.
On that note, thank you for joining us for another episode of Pat and the Fat Man. I'm Pat.
And I'm the Fat Man.
Stay classy.
Blue space boobs.
Dadgummit. Come on. If you want to paint your boobs blue.
That sounds like a challenge.
Or at least make your own patron for that. Don't put it on ours.
Don't be surprised you start getting texts at 3 a.m. I'm going to the Walmart right now.